Let's go on now and talk about cytoskeletal elements. We originally said that only eukaryotic cells have a cytoskeleton and prokaryotic cells do not. Well, that ended up being totally wrong. Although prokaryotic cells have a cytoskeleton made up of totally different kinds of proteins compared to eukaryotic cells. So their cytoskeletal elements are quite different. And we're not going to talk about prokaryotic cytoskeletons in this chapter. They're also not as complex, not surprisingly, because eukaryotic cells can undergo pretty drastic shape changes, for one thing, especially protists, unicellular protists particularly. Anyway, the cytoskeletal elements that you find in eukaryotic cells come in three major varieties, and we've already talked about this. You see those three right here. They are microtubules, microfilaments, and intermediate filaments, from left to right on this screen. But in terms of size, or the diameter of the filament, or the fiber, I should say, of some sort, the microtubules are the largest diameter. The microfilaments are the smallest diameter, and that is why we call the third one intermediate filaments. They have a diameter that is between the other two. But also the intermediate filaments have a much greater variety. There's several different kinds of intermediate filaments, whereas there's a lot more sameness in microtubules and in microfilaments. Well, these things are all polymers. First of all, they're all proteins, which themselves are polymers, but they're larger level polymers because proteins are combined into larger structures to form what can be quite long. Determined if you're talking about a cell that is long, for instance, like a neuron, a single neuron can extend from the spinal cord all the way down the leg, or all the way down the lower appendage. So it can have an enormously long axon in it, which contains microtubules that whole length. So they can be quite long. But, of course, if they are polymers, then they're made out of subunits. And in the case of microtubules, which are called microtubules, by the way, because once they are assembled, they are like a hollow tube, not a rod, which is solid, but a tube. Anyway, the monomers that make up microtubules are called tubulin. The protein is tubulin, but there are two forms of it, alpha tubulin and beta tubulin. And so a single alpha tubulin and a single beta tubulin get together to form a heterodimer, which you should appreciate that name, right? It's a heterodimer because the two parts of it are different from each other. Several different heterodimers then assemble into this tubular structure that is a microtubule. In the case of microfilaments, the monomers are actin proteins, and specifically they're called G-actin, G for globular, because a single G-actin molecule is a globular protein, kind of compact, represented by a sphere here. When you polymerize that, you string together several different G-actins to form what is called an F-actin, F for filamentous. And then two F-actins, which are already long, wrap around each other helically to form an F-actin dimer. Even it's called a dimer just because there's two F-actins, each of which is a polymer, really. Anyway, that's how that's built up. And then intermediate filaments are also made up of dimers, which are themselves little filaments, but then several different dimers get hooked together to form some intermediate filament of whatever length is required. As far as the uses are concerned, we've already talked about microtubules being important for cell trafficking, right? Because they are the little roadways that the motor proteins walk along as they carry vesicles of whatever cargo. So microtubules are appearing throughout the cytosol, joining different things so that materials can be moved from one place to another. But they also just give structure to the cell itself. Actin microfilaments, or just microfilaments as they're often called, are mostly involved in some sort of movement. And this is especially true in your muscles. Your skeletal muscles contract because of actin microfilaments. But that's not the only example. There's all kinds of movement types that can happen within a cell. And actin microfilaments are usually at least involved, if not solely responsible. Intermediate filaments are more about providing structure. Structural support, something to pull on, you know, mechanically important fibers. Let's go to two and look closely at microtubules. You can see that the microtubule structure, what makes it a tube, is that these heterodimers I was talking about stack end to end to form what's called a protofilament. So the one protofilament is just the ones that are labeled with alphas and betas here. So it's just an end-to-end arrangement of heterodimers. But a heterodimer has polarity to it, obviously, right? Because there's an alpha on one end and a beta on the other end. They're different from each other. So a protofilament always has itself polarity. There's always going to be an alpha end and a beta end. Several of those protofilaments then join together in this helical arrangement to form the overall tube, the microtubule. And there are two major categories of microtubules. There are cytosolic microtubules, which of course are in the cytosol. Those ones are much less stable. Those form and then unform over and over. Much less permanent structures. There are also what are called axonemal microtubules, axonemal. And those are much more stable. Those are built to stay in place. Those are associated with motile structures. Structures having to do with movement. For instance, cilia and flagella feature axonemal microtubules. Well, most of the cytosolic microtubules occur as singlets, just a single tube. But notice that doublets and triplets and even larger structures can be made when these tubes get together. And those are usually found in axonemal microtubules. Slide 3. This actually is done in vitro. So this is not how things happen necessarily in the cell. But if you mess around with these tubulin proteins in vitro, you can cause them to grow in test tubes. And what they see is that these oligomers form first, just a bunch of short lengths of heterodimers, right? Oligo meaning just some but not many. It's below poly. Eventually, though, they grow into a longer chain. And like I was saying, since the heterodimers have polarity to them, the overall microtubule has polarity to it. So we call one end the plus end, one end the minus end. And they are different from each other, not just because of the alpha and the beta. They behave differently. The plus end can much more easily undergo growth and decrease in length. The minus end can as well, just not nearly as much. So these things tend to grow from, you know, by adding on additional heterodimers to the plus end. Not so many are added to the minus end. And they grow, therefore, in the plus end direction, but they also can quickly decrease in length, and most of that decrease in length occurs because heterodimers are removed from the plus end much more easily than from the minus end. All right? Well, in slide 4, we can see why this occurs. In order to grow, the heterodimers are actually associated with GTP, not really for energy reasons, but GTP is bound to these alpha and beta subunits of the heterodimer when they come in to begin with. Okay? So no GTP energy is used in this polymerization, but the GTP is still there. And while the GTP is still on these alphas and betas, that stabilizes the plus end, keeping it from dismantling. And if you have more and more GTP-bound heterodimers available, this plus end will keep growing. Okay, so this is called the GTP cap. It's called the GTP cap because it's kept from dismantling. And so we can see in the graph that there will be a growth phase where GTP tubulin is added, so it gets longer and longer. But if it becomes unavailable, if the GTP heterodimers are in short supply, then the GTP subunits that are already attached, already part of the chain, start to lose their phosphates. And when that happens, then it is no longer stabilized. And then it can undergo a decrease in length called catastrophe. If it's a quite a big decrease in length, that's called catastrophe. So notice that's a downward slope. So the and then it just goes back and forth, growing and decreasing, but mostly at the plus end. Notice that the amplitude of this green line is much bigger than the amplitude of the red line. Same thing's happening at the minus end, just not nearly as much. And actually this, we'll talk more about why this is important, actually, that it grows and shortens when we get to the chapter on cell division, which is one of its major functions. In slide 5, we're looking at a centriole. And centrioles are features of animal cells. We find them in centrosomes. Now, a centrosome is an example of what we call a microtubule organizing center, or an MTOC. And you should have studied centrosomes already when you had your however many times you've learned cell division, mitosis, which occurs in eukaryotic cells in general. So, you know, plant cells as opposed to animal cells have centrosomes also, and those are places where these microtubules are growing out from to form the mitotic spindle, for instance. But plant cells' centrosomes do not have centrioles. Animal cells do. The centrioles are a pair. There's a pair in each centrosome that look like little pieces of licorice made up of microtubules, and the two of them are at right angles to each other. So they're usually depicted in cartoon form as a little T in the centrosome. The thing is, we haven't figured out why these things are there, what they do in animal cells. They must do something, otherwise they wouldn't be there, right? On the other hand, we can remove them and it doesn't seem to interfere with mitosis. And plant cells undergo mitosis without them without having them at all. So we haven't just figured it out yet. It's a mystery. So if you're looking for a doctoral project, a dissertation project, there you go. There's a question you can answer. Well, we're looking at, in slide 6, at several microtubule organizing centers in various cells. That's what MTOC stands for, as I said. Microtubule organizing centers are the places where these microtubules start growing, basically. And so they actually include other types of tubulin as well to get the process rolling, but then the alpha and the beta grow from there. And, for instance, in a neuron, which is what we're looking at in A, like I was saying, microtubules need to travel, need to extend all the way down that axon. And that's as a roadway function, like I was saying. These microtubules are places for the motor proteins to walk along. That's because the neurotransmitters that neurons use are manufactured in the cell body, which is where the nucleus is. But then they need to be shuttled down to the end of the neuron at the axon terminal where they are released from as neurotransmitters. And that's quite a long journey, considering that there's tiny little steps that these motor proteins are making. In the ciliated epithelium, we can see, as I was saying before, that microtubules are involved in cilia and flagella. In this case, these are axonemal microtubules, and they therefore are put in place and kept there for much longer. The cytosolic ones are growing and undergoing catastrophe all the time. In a red blood cell, you have microtubules that allow this thing to flatten into a biconcave disc rather than being more spherical. So that's a support function. And then in cell division, as we'll look in greater detail in a different chapter, the microtubules are definitely important as they form the mitotic spindle. And here you have the T-shaped centrioles I was talking about in centrosomes. 7. This is a microfilament, and microfilaments, like microtubules, have polarity to them. The ends are different. The G-actin, I mean, there's only one kind of protein used rather than two. There was alpha and beta tubulin in a microtubule, but in F-actin, there's only one kind of actin, G-actin. But it's a protein, and proteins in general, right, have different ends to them. They have a C-terminus and an N-terminus. So there ends up being a plus and a minus end to an F-actin as well. Remember I said that two F-actins, after you assemble them, then wrap around each other helically, coil around each other, to form the overall F-actin. I mean the overall actin microfilament. Well, we're also going to take a closer look at this in a different chapter when we talk about how the muscle cells work. But in 8, we can see some examples of different ways in which these microfilaments can be arranged as a contractile bundle, where they're in parallel, and this is how they are in your muscle cells, for instance, in different directions in a gel phase. In this is all in one cell. This is an amoeboid cell, right? It's crawling along, forming pseudopodia. And so different parts of the cell are doing different things at the same time. But the different functions are all coming from largely from actin microfilaments, but the arrangement of the actin microfilaments is different in different places, allowing them to have different shapes and move in different ways. By the way, the difference between a lamellipodium and a phyllopodium, both of which are examples of pseudopodia, which literally means false feet, is that a lamellipodium is more like a sheet. Lamella means layer. And a phyllopodium is more like a hair-like projection, very narrow rather than broad. In 9, we're looking at a very close-up view of an intestinal cell. This isn't several cells. This is just a tiny portion of one cell. The whole cell would be bigger than the room. So this is the main cytosolic part of that one cell, just a little bit of it. And this is a cell that has what are called microvilli on it. Villus means a finger-like projection. So a microvillus is a small villus. And we've talked about these before, right? Also, it's a way to drastically increase the surface area of the plasma membrane without actually increasing the volume of the cell. And the reason that's important is because in all this membrane are embedded a bunch of transport proteins that allow for absorption of the nutrients that have already been digested but are still outside the body in the lumen of the intestine, get those to be absorbed into the body. Well, giving structure to these microvilli, keeping them shaped the way they are a bunch of microfilaments, as you see, in cartoon form. Slide 10. Well, here we have a bunch of different kinds of proteins that I'm not going to name all these to you. That's not the importance. But what's important here is that the cytoskeleton is not something that is just inside the cell. It is something that is inside the cell, but it doesn't function just inside the cell. The cytoskeleton does various stuff only inside the cell, but it's also this system of proteins. It's also anchored to membrane-bound proteins at several different places. And so, for instance, if you have cytoskeleton inside one cell that is then anchored via other proteins to proteins in the plasma membrane, and then proteins extend through that plasma membrane outside the cell, which anchor to other proteins from another cell that's sticking out of them, that is anchored to a protein that goes through that membrane and then is anchored to the cytoskeleton within that cell, that's the way you can actually link these two cells together structurally strong, and if they're pulled by each other, they don't just rip the plasma membrane. It's because the cytoskeletons inside each cell are what are anchoring them in place. So that's really the thing that I wanted to talk about on this. Don't worry about the individual names of these. Just realize that the cytoskeleton can make intercellular connections mechanically strong through other linker proteins in each of the two cells involved. It also, though, it explains why changes in the cytoskeletal proteins can pull on the plasma membrane, which is what you see during cytokinesis, for instance, in an animal cell when the one cell pinches into two. It's because rings of contractile proteins are pulling on the plasma membrane via these proteins that are in the plasma membrane. And it's also why, for instance, many unicellular protists can have drastically elaborate shape changes, or even cells in your own body, macrophages, can undergo drastic shape changes when they engulf cells that are as big as they are. They wouldn't be able to do that without an elaborate cytoskeleton. Intermediate filaments are the only ones we haven't really talked about too much, and don't bother memorizing everything on this table. The point here is what I've already told you, that there are many different kinds of intermediate filaments, many more than there is variety in microtubules and microfilaments. And you find not only are there different kinds within a cell, but there are drastically different kinds that are used in different kinds of cells within your body. And they do different jobs. They are specific jobs, but most of those jobs are for mechanical strength in one way or another, for adding support. They are actually a scaffolding that holds things in place. Well, in 12, we can see how these things are being built. Really already saw it. This is just a close-up view. dimers are formed in a twisting motion. Notice that there's a C and an N. That's because these things are polypeptides, right? So there's always going to be a C terminus and an N terminus. But they are wrapped around each other so that the overall dimer has a C end and an N end. And then there is a protofilament that's formed that is tetrameric. And that's because two dimers get together and form associations laterally and in a kind of a staggered position. And when this happens over and over, you have a intermediate filament of really whatever length you want. It just depends on how many of these protofilaments you put together. But this thing that's in C is much, much thinner than the overall one in D. You build up a D intermediate filament, a complete intermediate filament, by having many of these things in parallel, side by side. So they end up being pretty strong. It's many, many proteins involved in just a single intermediate filament. Now, it looks like we're done. Should we take a vote to see who wants to start a new chapter right before spring break? I won't be able to be here, by the way, next week, so you guys can have that off, too.